Okay, so we'll start with, are there any announcements? Well, I guess I can let you know that the next couple of weeks we have some, well, next few weeks we have some exciting presentations. Next week, Jeffrey Haynes Stiles, who's the project director for Earth, the Operator's Manual, is going to give a talk on his an overview of his whole project. And the following week, Richard Alley is going to give a presentation focused on his contribution to Earth, the Operator's Manual. So that should be a really exciting talk. And then coming up after that, we have Rachel Hollander from the Partnership for Education on Climate Change, Engineered Systems and Society Project. And then the week after that, we have Mark McCaffrey and Josh Reznow from the National Center for Science Education, who I think are going to be talking about the next generation standards. So we have an exciting lineup of talks. And so it's good we're having this conversation today about these session proposals that are kind of due soon after those talks are over. So anyway, so that's one thing that's coming up. Are there any other announcements?
This will take. Peg Stephan, just want to let you all know, if you are going to NSTA the end of this month, we have a symposium on climate education, and one of the speakers will be Ed Maybach.
Great. So, Peg, have you said that we actually have been accumulating a list of presentations on climate-focused topics from the Climate Literacy Network that we'll have as a flyer at NSTA? Have you sent that in? I have not looked at what Sarah's accumulated. So you may have sent it in already. I don't know.
Don't know that I've sent anything in yet.
Okay, so if you could, if for anybody else, if you're making a presentation at NSTA and haven't yet forwarded it to, if you forward it to the whole list, then I'll be sure to get it. Or you can just send it to me, and I'll send it on to Sarah. So just basically the title, who's the lead convener, and the time and the place. And we'll have a flyer that's put together in chronological order of when the presentations are.
Okay. You want that to go to you?
Why don't you send it to me and to Sarah Hill. Sarah Hill is sarah_hill@turk.edu.
Okay.
Great. And anybody else, and if you know of anybody else who's making a presentation, I'll send an email out as a reminder to the Climate Literacy Network again.
Thanks.
Okay, so if there are no other announcements, we can get down to the two topics I'd like to sort of get the conversation going for today, and that is that NAAEE has a session proposal deadline as April 26th, and AGU has a session proposal deadline for April 20th. Now, there's a big difference between these two kinds of session proposals. NAAEE is actual presentations, so I was hoping that either Karen Holwood or Laura Simmons could call in, but I don't
care. And Karen's
actually
here.
Yep. Oh, terrific.
And Bora is also here.
Oh, terrific. So I'll just say the distinction is that the NAAA are for actual presentations, and so there's an abstract that's very specific to what you want to present. The AGU sessions are session proposals for which then you will solicit people to submit abstracts. So you may end up having a paper or an abstract in that particular session, but you can also help organize that session by contributing to putting together the session proposal. So we'll talk about both, but with Bora and Karen on the phone, can you give an overview of what's expected for NAAEE, so that, because you're more knowledgeable about that than I am?
I just sent out an email with the link on it. So if people have that email, they can click on the link and go to the website while one of us is talking and actually see the call for presentations.
Okay.
Has it reached your inboxes or not, is my question.
I got it.
Great.
You got to Seattle.
Yep,
okay.
Yes, sir.
Thanks. And let me just say that if you click on the first the page that that link takes you to, there's a line that says Call for Presentations Annual Conference. Under the submission deadline date of April 25th. And if you'll click on that link, you go to the page that's 2012 Call for Presentations. And there are two things on that page that are important. One is the session formats, and one is the conference strands that are listed down where the bullets are. And I think if you click on session formats first, that'll be the easiest way to answer Tamara's question of what are these presentation proposals about. You all see the session formats?
Yes, I have it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think the film presentation is pretty self-explanatory. Then a hands-on presentation is more like what, and Bora, please chime in,
sure.
More like what people generally call a workshop, where you actually have materials there and people engage in activities or some kind of an internet discussion. It's not a presentation as such. It's more of a workshop. And those are scheduled for 60 minutes. Then poster sessions, I think, are pretty self-explanatory for the people on this call. You are familiar with the 4x4 foot presentations that are up on a board. The boards are set up in the display area, so there's a social event and traffic there, and people go around and talk to the individual presenters of the posters. A roundtable discussion is a little bit of a different format. It's a minute long, but what it is people...
It's 60 minutes long.
People who are located at tables with signs on the table so that you can find someone who has special expertise or programming that you want to talk to in more depth. And Tamara, you might want to say a word or two about the roundtable sessions that you've done the last 1 or 2 years.
Right. I've done it a couple of years, and I'll do it again this year. We do a roundtable discussion for the Climate Literacy Network. And it's usually there's two roundtables together. I invite anybody from the Climate Literacy Network to come and participate with me. You can have your name on the session proposal if you tell me that soon enough. But it's an opportunity to engage people in a discussion about what the Climate Literacy Network is and potentially get them involved in participating in the Climate Literacy Network. And a lot of times we talk about individual projects that people are involved in within the Climate Literacy Network. So it's very informal, but very rich discussions with people that might not know anything about what it is you're doing, but could potentially be interested.
I think I'm Bob Bleeker out here in California. I think this is where I met you tomorrow at one of those, the roundtable. I think it's where I first. It's really, I think, one of the best formats if you really want to get talking with folks and tell them what you're on about.
Great, thanks. And then symposia are an hour and 45 minutes, and they're more like a panel. And we did a symposium last year on controversial issues that was standing room only, very well attended, which had a range of people from Frank and Peg to environmental education researchers who have worked on the pedagogy of teaching controversial environmental issues. And there, we did short panel presentations and then open discussion with the audience. Traditional presentations are 45 minutes on a single topic, which is, as it says, traditional. And then you can also have a traditional presentation that's only 20 minutes. Obviously, there are more 20-minute slots than there are 45-minute slots. And then the other type of format is the last one listed there, workshop, which is a full day or a half a day at which a group of people want to really hold a substantive workshop for a longer period of time to get deeply into an issue. And I don't know whether there's anybody on the call today that was involved in the climate change education workshop that was held on the day before the formal conference began last year. Is there anyone who can report on that?
I was there. This is Kristen.
Oh, hi, Kristen.
Hey. It went really well. It was very, my suggestion if folks wanted to do that again is just really, really advertising it because we had trouble getting people enrolled to make it really worthwhile for the number of people that came to do the provide the workshop.
It needs to be promoted. I agree with you, Kristen.
Yep. But otherwise, the participants, I think, was very positive response, and it was fun. It was fun to put together too. In the end.
So somebody to do that kind of a workshop requires somebody to really be the ringleader and coordinate a group of people who can put together either a half day or a full day session and then promote it.
Do you have a sense that they would be, I mean, I know they do limited workshops, that they would be interested in something that was focused like specifically on climate change again next year?
Somebody would have to explore that, and there are ways to...
Yeah, I think that last year there was a strand that was specifically climate change, and this year it's a little bit more tangential.
Right.
It seems to me in terms of the conference strands.
Yeah, right, way to access one of the workshop sessions is to do it through one of the interest groups. So, for instance, for the informal educators... we might team up with them and say, you know, we have a whole variety of kinds of programs that we could present and collaborate with you on in presenting a workshop. Would you like to work with us?
Mm-hmm.
So there are ways of dealing with that if there's a group interested in doing that. If you go up above the format list, don't click around, just scroll up. And it says the strands for 2012 are? Do you find that place?
Yeah. Would somebody, I mean, are they a lot? Would somebody mind reading them?
You're not at a computer, is that right?
No, yeah, that's right.
Okay. They're conservation education, food and agriculture, green schools, marine, bay, and freshwater education, networking and leadership development, and socio-ecological education. And clearly there is not, as Tamara said, there's not a strand for climate change education this year, but I have talked to the conference organizer committees, and they have told me they have written the descriptions of each of these strands so that climate change education is clearly an option for any of the strands, and what we will need to do is to read each one of the blue strand labels that I read out is linked to a full description of that strand, and then you'll need to pitch your presentation proposal to the criteria that they'll be using to rate acceptances for inclusion in each of those strands.
And can you outline what a session proposal entails? Because it's more than just an abstract. And so just to give everybody, in case people haven't done this before,
if you go up above where it says conference strands, it's... Oops, that's not the right place. Aura, help.
Okay.
It's right up above. It says guidelines for preparing successful proposals or how to submit a...
submit. Oh, where did that go? Download. Oh, yeah. Okay, so click on the how to submit a presentation proposal.
Let's go down to where Tamara said first, all the way at the bottom or near the bottom. It says guidelines for preparing successful proposals.
Right, yeah.
Let's look at that first and then go to where Bora suggested. And in my mind, the most important thing is the last bullet, which says, how well does this presentation fit the strand description and focus questions? Because the people who are reviewing the proposals will be doing that by strand, and they will look at the criteria to be accepted for that strand.
Right.
And just so everybody understands, these things get reviewed and they get scored on each of the areas.
Yep.
Yes.
So it's quite a rigorous review process for a presentation.
Right. And there are traditionally, you know, a lot of the points go to how well it fits the strand. So it's important if you go through and put in a proposal that you really read carefully the strand descriptions, and there's a description and then there's some questions that, you know, sort of help you guide like how well of a fit this is. And it's important that you write your abstract and, you know, the other explanation of your presentation. You write it so that somebody scoring this will say, ah, yeah, this fits our strand well. Hint, hint. I mean, this is kind of, there is, obviously, I'm not a big fan of strands, but there is a bit of a, you know, make sure that you don't just sort of say, this is a great teacher hands-on workshop.
Okay.
You know, it may be, but make sure that, you know, if there's a connection between what you do and ocean, then go in that strand and play up that part, even though it may be sort of a smaller piece.
Yeah.
A quick question about the strand piece. Is there any advantage to connecting to multiple strands well versus connecting to an individual strand well?
No, because the proposals are dished out to the strand committees for review.
I see. So that it never becomes an advantage.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I would encourage people to think about this and decide on how you want to propose, but then let me know what you're going to propose so we can start compiling a list, and then especially when sessions get accepted, we'll put together a flyer from the Climate Literacy Network. So it won't matter what strand you're in, but all the relevant climate literacy presentations will be on one document. And I must say, last year that wasn't as important because there was a climate change strand, but the previous year when there wasn't, it was crucially important. A lot of people found a lot of the sessions because of our flyer, and we can have that at multiple places. There's booths there. I know Noah had them at one point, had our flyers, and I think some of the other booths had our flyers, and last year we tried to have them at the workshop, which was first because that was the first item. Again, it's in chronological order, so you want to have it at that earliest session so that people can take it away and engage with the rest of the session. So
yep.
This is an opportunity.
And just go one step below where we last talked about the guidelines for preparing successful proposals, and you'll see what Bora was talking about, and Tamara, which is how to submit a presentation proposal, and the first link is to download the form. And that'll give you the answer to Tamara's questions of all the things that are asked for on the form. And some of those things have to do with a description of what you're going to do in the session or the presentation, and others, I'm trying to get to it right now. Oops, there it is.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, pretty traditional stuff of, you know, checking which strand you're wanting, what format you want. Do you want the 45-minute or the 20-minute or the hands-on? And then title the abstract, which in this case is only 40 words, but then there's a description that is 250 words, and that's where you're going to really be describing what you're doing, but also how it's connecting to the strand.
And the form is a little bit different than it has been in previous years. They're not asking you to describe how you fit with the long-range plan for NAAEE or the guidelines, but they are expecting you to read some what they call presenter guidelines and look at those in detail and consider them as you define your session.
Right, so they're not judging it anymore against how it fits against the guidelines.
Right.
Although I'm looking at the Marine Bay and Freshwater Education strand right now, and it does say that if you are focusing on the role of oceans and climate or impacts of climate change on oceans, that you should identify climate literacy principles.
Right.
Or climate literacy principles. That's different from the guidelines.
Right.
And Great Lakes, yep, and Great Lakes or Great Lakes literacy principles or ocean literacy principles. Yep.
And one of the strands they've as Karen said, they've done it slightly different this year. So the networking and leadership development strand does specifically, so if you're doing something that's related to the guidelines or linking your project to the guidelines or talking about how, you know, it connects one way or the other, then it goes under the networking and leadership. And it's that connection to the guidelines that makes it fit that strand. So it is a slightly different sort of bent this year.
The social ecological one's interesting. It says programs exist that are not currently considered environmental education. That's pretty broad.
Right, and that has a lot to do with one of the major programs that NAAE is involved with, a project out of Cornell called EE Capacity, and Karen's involved with that, and so am I. And it's really trying to link in the people who are doing a lot of the homegrown and especially urban types of activities that we all would probably call environmental education, but they don't necessarily think of it that way because their major mission may be to maybe community wellness, or it may be youth development, or it may be working with homeless people or women at a shelter, and they happen to be doing environment-related things in order to meet that mission. So we see it as environmental education. They don't necessarily. So what we're trying to do is link everybody together so that we can share information and gain, you know, sort of gain capacity amongst everybody.
Right.
Everything from urban gardening to weatherization in low socioeconomic neighborhoods and some of the examples that Bora gave.
Right. Yeah, the only one I see that has climate change, the actual words in it, is under that Marine Bay.
Right. But again, you can, you know, if you're doing something, say you're doing something that relates to green schools, you know, or to schools, and you can relate the notion of climate change, then that's how you
yeah,
sort of link it in.
One of the schools we're working with has a green academy in it, so I can see how you can tie that in.
There you go.
Right.
Yep.
Exactly.
So the roundtable for the Climate Literacy Network might best fit under networking and leadership development.
Yep. Exactly.
Before we move off of NAAA, Karen or Bora, could you speak briefly about the research aspect of the conference? Is that on a different timeline or a different process, or how do you work with that side of NAAA conferences?
It is a different process, and it is a different, I'd have to look and find that part of the website to find when it's due, but basically it's a...
I'll do that while you talk about
okay.
it, Bora.
Yeah, it's in essence, a separate conference. It's
I
a couple
co-located.
Of
co-located.
No, it's prior to, co-located, but prior to, yes.
Right, exactly. So it's like the 2 or 3 days before the main conference begins.
It's October 9-10.
Really, right, so it's the Tuesday, Wednesday before the sort of, and to keep this in perspective, on the Wednesday is when the workshops are, the half day and full day. So these things kind of do this little moving overlap thing.
But and the submission deadline for the research proposals is the same. It's April 25th.
Right. But it does, they are separately reviewed. So they're reviewed by the folks who are organizing the research symposium. And they have a separate sort of focus and a separate, you know, I know that one of their big areas of focus is bringing in new researchers. So giving lots of attention and how mentoring and help for graduate students and younger in their career researchers. But that would only be one part of the conference.
And it's the home page for the research symposium says this year's research symposium explores the process of doing environmental education research. Emphasis to examining works in progress and to looking at the stories behind the research. And then they list four goals for the research symposium.
Research is also accepted during the regular conference. So you can, if you have research ongoing, you might, you know, present something during the research symposium that fits the symposium and where you're presenting primarily to researchers. And then you might present something during the regular part of the conference where the audience may be some researchers but far more practitioners. So, you know, you're looking at it from different dissemination and sort of feedback and all that kind of stuff.
And the research symposium page also lists some of the same formats, but also some different formats. So you need to go there to specifically see how they are laying it out and organizing it.
So I would suggest, I don't know if anybody is on the call, is part of the TRI-PI evaluation call that happens on, there's another one tomorrow. But I would highly recommend that this community, I would imagine some are aware, but maybe not all.
Yeah, I'm on that as well. Bob from Channel Islands.
Fantastic. Do you think, Bob, have you ever been to the NAACP research?
I went last year because it was Lynn Chambers organized the NASA folks to have our PI right before this conference.
Right.
And I was so impressed that I said, well, I'm going to come to that next year, maybe present. And then I found out it's out here on the West Coast. So, and also, it starts on my birthday. So it's like for all those reasons, I'll have to go to this conference.
This is Anna.
And host the happy hour that night.
Well, there you go. Okay, well, more on that later. But I think with the common framework thing, I think that would be probably a worthwhile thing to do in the research part. I agree with you on that.
This is Anne at NASA. I'll make sure to put that in the announcements slides prior to the webinar we have tomorrow.
There you go, Anne. Thank you.
Yep.
I wasn't sure you were with us.
Yeah. Hello.
Where is the
link? The part of the reason I brought it up is, the field of research in the environmental education field. I mean, I might be saying things that everybody already knows, but, I mean, really are important to inform our practice, especially as we move into the more sophisticated parts of climate and related literacies education. You know, skill development, competencies, those kinds of things. The research becomes even more critical.
Absolutely. And we're going to have time at the end of tomorrow's webinar, too, to have some discussion. So this might be something we want to, you know, bring up on both ends of the webinar.
Great. All right, thank you.
Now, where is the information about that research part? I would have totally missed that. Is it on this same link?
Yep. If you go to that link, you'll have two choices. You can either get more details about the research symposium, October, 9 and 10. Or you can get details about the full conference, which is October 10 to 13. They're both there in great detail.
Yes.
Well, and Tamara, maybe what we ought to do is shift now to the AGU, and after you get some receive some ideas from people, have another few minutes to talk about it at a future conference call.
Right. I think what we'll do is, yes, so exactly. People should think about this. We will
briefly bring it up during the announcements period over the next few weeks where we have lots of presentations, but I think the 17th of April, which is about a little over a week before the proposals are due, we can have a more detailed call again about what people are planning. So I agree. Let's shift now over to the AGU meeting, and unlike, as we said at the beginning, unlike the NAAW where you're actually proposing an actual presentation or a workshop or something around particular content or information you have to share, the AGU session proposals are proposals for sessions of which you would like people to submit abstracts to, and we need somewhere between 3 and 4 people to be the conveners of each of these sessions with a lead for each, and then that lead would actually submit independently the session proposal. I propose we do what we did last year, which was very effective, is that each session title start with climate literacy colon, and then whatever that particular team thinks should be the title. And the purpose here is so that we get a good suite of sessions that address the breadth of what the kinds of abstracts we might get, and also not overlap too much, so that it's clear for somebody who's submitting an abstract where they might submit it. And just to give you some context, last year, and I sent out the list of sessions we proposed last year, and we're actually available for people to submit abstracts to. There were 7 of them, we'll go over the topics in a minute. We had 107 abstracts submitted to those 7 sessions, which I was thrilled about. I thought that was very impressive at a predominantly science-focused meeting to have that many abstracts submitted. Ultimately, some of the sessions got more abstracts than others. We were ultimately combined down to 5 sessions, which actually in the email actually lists what the topics of those 5 sessions were. A few of them actually combined with other climate-related sessions. It seems that in the session proposals, they don't discriminate too much and don't really force people to combine early. They just put them all up there, even if they look like they overlap. But then they do that combining later, and sometimes it seems appropriate and sometimes not. But so a few. Last year there was a session that ended up with only 2 abstracts, and they were both put in the one that I led, which was around the K-12 audiences. And it turned out that one, I don't know why they chose that to combine them with our session, but one was K-12 and the other one was higher ed. And so it wasn't really appropriate for our session, but then I was able to redirect it to our higher ed session. So all the abstracts were accommodated. Anyway, so given the success we had last year, I think we should go ahead and submit these session proposals this year. And so the topics last year, an aside context, is we did submit 2 session proposals to GSA, one focused on formal education venues, which encompassed K-12 and higher ed, I think, and informal, and the other one more addressing evaluation and research around climate literacy and climate change. So those are the kinds of, that was a discrimination. We were advised not to submit too many sessions, so that's how we broke it down for GSA. We have not heard yet about those sessions. Oh, actually, we have. I think that those were accepted, but people can't start submitting abstracts till April, so we'll start advertising that relatively soon. So the ones we had last year were, if people have the Word document I sent out, which was the list from last year, one session was on addressing barriers, what does the research tell us, one was evidence of progress, one was focused on higher ed, one was focused on integrating research and science and solutions. One was on informal contexts, zoos, aquarium, and museums, and then the K-12, and then the role of belief, trust, and values in climate change education efforts. And some of those got combined down so that we ended up with One that addressed barriers to progress and increasing climate literacy. One was on higher ed. One was on K-12. One was on integrating research and education science solutions, and that encompassed the roles of belief and trust and values. And one was focused on evaluating progress. So that's the context for this year, from last year. Are there any thoughts about whether this is, while the titles might change, whether there's something, another way we might want to pose these this year, or would we like to go with, we could just propose 5 sessions this year and have the abstracts address the range that, the range of the type of abstracts we'd like to have. One issue that I knew that occurred from last year is some groups felt really strongly that they have one that was focused solely on informal education, and I think that that ended up getting combined with another session. So I don't know, are there any thoughts about there of how things worked last year and what we should potentially propose this year?
Well, I don't remember the number being ED10, but the one was like evaluations. We got many years of evaluation data. That there were so many scientists came by and seemed to get so much out of all those posters that were in that session. I don't think I'd want to change the description much on that one. They were coming by to see the data. They were really interested in any kind of graphic that was on any of those posters. I think there was like 10 or 12 of us.
Would you combine a session that was about evaluation and also research, or do you think that those are distinct enough that they should be separate sessions?
Well, I kind of mean both research and evaluation.
Research and evaluation. I agree. I just wanted your take on it.
I have a comment. This is Anna Gold. Out of these 5 sessions last year, I thought the one that included the role of belief, trust, and values, I thought it was a really interesting session, but I did find it a pretty large stretch. It was obvious there were 2 sessions combined between the two, because there's like so much even in this title. I don't think it was a very well, in the end, what happened when they had to combine them, it wasn't a very well pointed description of a session. So I think that we might need to rethink this, even though I really enjoyed all the talks in that session.
Well, part of it, we can submit them as separate sessions again, and so that I think the struggle is that once you're forced to combine, once you have the abstracts in hand, it's hard to then, within the word limit, restructure the description such that it encompasses well.
Yeah.
So I think I agree that that's a problem.
That's why I think in this case it's probably better to do both of these sessions that were combined, propose them separately, because they were good sessions, but they are not very strong in the way they ended up.
What was the other piece? So there was the roles of belief, but then integrating research and education, science and solutions. Can you describe what the theme of that was more? I mean, if we're going to combine research with evaluation this time, then maybe we just have the beliefs, trust, and value session as separate. Or do you think that there is a place to have a separate session for the first part there?
No, I think the first part can go into evaluation and research part.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, and then where did the informal education piece end up? Like, it's hard for me to tell from the titles.
Mm-hmm.
I can find that.
The engaging and evaluating public and K-12 audiences. I think the public audiences is the informal. So the third one in your list that you sent out.
Okay. But we had, all right, so we had pre-college activities. That was really, that was the one I led, was K-12. So, okay, they must have changed it. All right. All right, so informal, K-12, higher ed. And then there was this barriers to progress and barriers and progress in increasing climate literacy. What does the evidence teach us? Would you think, what do people think about that being part of the research component? Or do you think that there are obstacles in the classroom that would be reported separately from a research and evaluation kind of session?
As one of the co-conveners of this barriers and progress in increasing climate literacy, I do think that I would leave them separate, and then they would be an easy combine later. But this really was focused on misconceptions and how do you address those in the classroom. And research can be so much beyond misconceptions.
Right. Okay, so if the title were really reflected the misconceptions,
yeah,
that might make it clearer. Because we really do want the titles. I mean, obviously the 800 character or 700, whatever it is, abstract that we provide with this can illuminate, but we really need the titles to reflect, make it clear to people who might be submitting abstracts where they belong. So, okay, so this is the misconception session. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm counting 6 now. Research and evaluations, role of beliefs, informal, K-12, higher ed, and misconceptions. That's 6 sessions. So what I can do is I can put together a set of tentative titles that I can share with the Climate Literacy Network, and we can hone that down. And as we share those, we can get people to step up and say they'd be interested in being a co-convener of one of them and sort of develop the set of co-conveners. My guess is we'll end up doing what we did last year, is having a teleconference with those people who, separate from the Climate Literacy Network call, of those people who would be co-convening, so that we make sure that one of the things we want to make sure is we're not competing for each other's invited speakers and such. So it's kind of like a half-hour phone call just to get everybody on the same page.
Tamara, this is Kristen. I'm just wondering what you saw, what you generally see audience-wise. I've been to a pre-conference for AGU before, but obviously I work more in the education realm. Do you have a lot of educators that show up for some of these sessions then, or does it tend to be more the research and science crowd?
Well, I could say I wish it was more of the research and science crowd, but it's not. It's mostly educators and you know, so it's our community sharing with each other, which at this point, because of the large number of education sessions, is quite useful now. I mean, when we first started having education sessions at AGU, it was hard to even get very many people to come because there weren't a lot of educators there. But mm-hmm. Now that's changed. I mean, we had there were over 700 abstracts submitted to education sessions last year. We had 107 of them, which was amazing. Now, that being said, AGU had 20,000 people last year. So we're still not a huge fraction, but we're significant enough. One of the things I've tried to do with specific abstracts that I've submitted, not in the sessions, it doesn't really work as well there, but with the sometimes you can get an education paper inserted into a science session. And my best example of that was there was one science session on the use of cryospheric data sets. And
cool.
Most of what it was led by Mark, I'm blanking on his last name, but he's at the National Snow and Ice Data Center. And
Mark Sarays?
No, Mark Parsons. Mark Parsons is who it was. Mark Parsons actually manages the data sets at the National Snow and Ice Data Center, and what he was after was how scientists can share their cryospheric data sets among different projects. And I know him, and I contacted him and said, would an education paper be useful? And so I actually got what we have. I have a number of Earth Exploration Toolbook chapters, and we have an Earth Labs module, both for use in high school and undergraduate level educational contexts. that use cryospheric data sets. And so I submitted that paper, and what was really nice was that I was a poster, but I was in among science presentations. And so all of those people, the scientists, learned about ways that the data sets that they're presenting could potentially be used in educational context. So I'm always constantly trying to bridge that gap.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally, I think we're getting more visibility so that we might be attracting more of the scientists, but historically, it's mostly an education crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a science meeting, and so I do try to make the presentations. They're not speaking just to educators or just to scientists, but because we're at a science meeting, I really do want to address scientists, but the reality is we get lots of educators.
It might be interesting this year, AGU is for the first time, I think, over a weekend. It starts on a Friday and goes till Monday, maybe. And mm-hmm. It might be maybe more educators come then. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
I mean, it would be. It actually is worthwhile to at least find avenues to email for educators who are in the area. Last year, we did try to have we did some invited talks for the K-12 session. We actually had teachers who were involved with my Earth Labs project actually do the presentation. And we had people from NESTA, the National Earth Science Teachers Association, which is mostly K-12 teachers, give a presentation also. And last year, actually, AGU was quite respectful when we told them that NSTA members had a regional meeting in Seattle the last half of the week of AGU, and I don't know if everybody noticed, all of the climate sessions were in the first half of the week, Monday and Tuesday mostly, a little bit on Wednesday, because we knew that all of our K-12 teachers who were active were going to be leaving, had to leave by Thursday morning to get to their NSTA meeting in Seattle, Washington. So.
Actually, Tamara, that opens up an interesting point. There was problems with because of that, because a lot of us had to choose between sessions because they're all jammed together. Do you think in the future we would be more spread out?
Well, we can request that. My experience is they make no guarantees because they have an awful lot of sessions to schedule. We could request that sessions not be conflict with each, oral sessions not conflict with each other. Obviously, poster sessions are going to be, but they'll be
right.
Listed. They'll be listed in conflict, but since they're up for half a day, you should be able to get to them. But we could ask if the oral sessions are not in conflict with each other.
That'd be great.
And I remember last time, you have to be a member of AGU, right? You need to go through somebody that is a member?
Well, so a lot of us are members of AGU. We'll probably have, I don't think you need to be a member to be a co-convener. You do probably need to be a member to submit the proposal. And so we'll work that out because we need to have, what I've tried to do is not only is to have four people be co-conveners on one proposal and to spread out the organizational representation so that we don't have one organization focus only on one session but spread out their participation on number of sessions. So we will work that out. But you don't need to be a member to be a co-convener, and you don't need to be a member to submit an abstract. You need somebody to sponsor it, and I'll just tell you, you just need a member to sponsor it if they're not an author. If you don't have an author being a co-author. If you don't have a co-author being an AGU member, then one of us, somebody else can from the Climate Literacy Network can co-sponsor. So there shouldn't be any barriers to participation. Okay, so as I said, I will put together some tentative titles around these six topics. Is there who on the call is interested in being a co-convener so I can make sure you guys are in the loop here? I'll send it out to everybody, but up front.
This is Anne. I'm definitely interested in the evaluation and research focus.
And your last name is Miller, is that
it's
right?
It's Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N.
Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N, evaluation.
And you can put me down, Bob Bleeker, put me down for the same kind of evaluation.
Can you spell your last name, please?
B as in boy, L-E-I-C-H-E-R.
Okay, and evaluation.
I'm interested in Tamara. This is Anna.
Okay, this is Anna. Okay.
Right, Nepal is also interested.
Right. Okay, anybody else? Okay, and so I have Anna and Frank's email addresses, and you sent me an email earlier today, so I have your email address.
Right.
So Bob, if you can just send me an email with your email address, that would be helpful. Then I can make sure you get it.
It's tomorrow, right?
Tamara, T-A-M-A-R-A, underscore.
I'll send you an email right now.
Okay. The other thing I'll do is, which worked out well last time, is I'll create a Google spreadsheet so that we can all kind of track what each other's doing and make sure that we are covering a range of bases and not having too much overlap. Because I think the key to getting a wide range of abstracts is to make it clear in the description and the title where somebody belongs. Make them distinct enough so that it's understood.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for taking all of that on for us.
Sure. Okay. And it turns out I have one other announcement that I forgot to make earlier. There's another group of NSF-funded projects called Discovery Research K-12, DRK-12, of which I have a project in, and I had submitted a session. The DRK-12 PI meeting is in June. And I gather that there is about 30 projects in that are focused on environmental education. And so I had submitted a session proposal for the PI meeting to engage the environmental literacy projects in a conversation around addressing climate literacy. Karen Holwig was a co-author of that session proposal with me, and we just found out last week that it's been accepted. So we're going to be putting together a session where hopefully we'll be engaging a whole other group of funded climate-related projects in our broader network.
Congratulations, Tamara.
Thanks. So is there any other questions about either NAAEE or AGU that people would like to talk about? The AGU session proposals are due on April 20th, and we will revisit this briefly on the next few calls. On the 17th, we'll talk about it in more depth when we don't have another presentation, which is still before both of those deadlines. Okay, then. Well,
Tamara, I have one quick question. There's a set of conferences that we don't normally talk about, which is the regional NSTA. And,
right.
I'm imagining that those sessions are long past, but there might be value in knowing what the community is doing at those to see if there's any, support or we can collaborate after the fact.
Sure. No,
you mean the state conferences for NSTA?
They're not state. They're four regional conferences, so it's broader than states. We could potentially do that. We could potentially have focus one of our meetings on those kind of discussions. It also suggests, I don't know, Scott, do you have the schedule of NSTA regional and national meetings on the Climate Literacy Network calendar?
No, I haven't put those up, but I certainly could.
Yeah, that would be good if we have...
I'll look for those.
So we should have GSA, AGU, NAAEE, and the NSTA regional and national conferences.
Good.
At least those posted. I know that GSA also has a regional conference. The one in Hartford is going to be this Sunday, and I'm actually, for NAGT, the National Association of Geoscience Teachers, I'm a counselor at large and the liaison to the Northeast Regional NAGT group, which is going to be meeting on Sunday. So I'm going to actually be there in Hartford, Connecticut. It's this weekend. So I don't know if that's relevant to the regional GSA meetings, but I'm not even sure how many of them there are. I just know about that one.
the reason I bring it up is I think a more coordinated strategy relative to our outreach and engagement with the educators, especially as the new standards come out, that the uptake on the all the work we're doing could be sizable. So it would hate to have one go unnoticed.
Yep. Okay. Well, thanks for bringing that up. We'll see what we can.
A quick question to all the federal agency people on the call. I'm wondering whether the budget cuts are having any impact on your agency's participation in conferences, either as participants, presenters, or exhibitors.
And Anne, are you a civil servant?
I'm not, but I can say that more generally at NASA, yes, definitely. Because travel is something that is a major problem now. So travel is a really big issue going forward.
But to be more specific, thank you, Anne, it's not just budget cuts. They're disproportionately targeting administrative costs, and travel falls under administrative costs. So the president has said he'll get some efficiencies out of the government through going after administrative cost reductions. It was supposed to be a 20% reduction. My travel is down probably 85%. 80%.
Wow.
So I don't know how 20% became, 80%, but that's the reality we live under now. So we're going to explore more ways to have efficiencies or, one person goes here, one person goes there, as opposed to two would have normally been the way we did it.
Well, one thing that we do, and we could possibly think about this for the ESA Federation, the Federation of Earth Science Information Partners, is we actually send people to the regional NSTA meetings, but we pick the people that are the most local so that the travel is minimal.
Yep. So we're going to, Karen, that was you, Karen, right?
Yep.
We're going to have to come up with a robust strategy here, and it's going to have to require a much more coordinated approach. I've already started having some conversations with NASA where we talk about a federal space at exhibits as opposed to each agency having their own, where we do more work across agencies to keep up our outreach and engagement. That's the only strategies I've got now. And then there's obviously the other one is virtual participation, where we, WebEx our presentation in and we're sitting somewhere else remotely. But there's cost there.
Great idea. That's helpful.
This is Peg Steffen. I would second that. We're reducing our exhibit schedule and our travel schedule significantly this year. We did try last fall a virtual climate conference on the Second Life platform, and I have a video that was produced by the support group Raytheon, who gave us some training support and conference support. You might be interested to take a look at this tool because it would be a way to reduce carbon footprint, yet still managing to have a virtual presence.
Would it be appropriate to potentially have that be a presentation on our telecon one week?
Sure.
That would be great.
I like that idea.
In fact, we're just getting ready to do the second round of that.
Okay, great. I will contact you about that. Okay. All right, everyone. Thank you very much for calling in. We'll continue to move all of these efforts forward.
Thank you, Tamara.
Thank you very much. All right.
Bye.
Bye.